Zorbapastor on Your Health is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorbapastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorbapastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office.
Absolutely virtual, but we are real.
We're real. But Zorba, I'm looking around here. I don't see your reflex hammer. are we missing that? It's not here.
No.
Maybe you can use your gavel.
That's right.
Could your gavel sub
actually,
in for that?
The gavel would work.
Okay.
Sure.
I'll get my knee up on
the table.
Anyways, we're going to talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few voicemails as well. And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
Common low-calorie sweetener may be linked to heart disease and stroke. We're going to talk about something that may influence what you eat, especially if you're trying to lose weight. And facial thermal imaging and artificial intelligence may accurately predict the presence of coronary artery disease. Who knew?
Wow.
Who knew? You
I
might be able
that.
To look in a camera, and AI may say you are at risk for heart disease. Doesn't say whether or not you have it or not, but it may be another screening tool that's going to be used in the future.
Fascinating. And what's the special recipe today?
Couscous with chickpeas and roasted vegetables. I was in Morocco recently, and couscous really is the food of Morocco. It is a delicious dish. If you've never tried couscous, this is the dish to try. And if you've tried couscous, this is the dish you should make.
All right. To the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's welcome our first caller now. This is a listener in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I've been having some digestive issues. I've always kind of struggled with digestive problems.
Uh-huh.
I've never actually been diagnosed with IBS or anything, but I've tried to take probiotics and other things like that. But lately I've been feeling this. It's like an inflammation in my stomach, like right under my lowest rib. I feel this like inflammation and like fullness, even when I'm not full. And after I eat, I get this, it's like my stomach is like very loud and active. And if I move around a certain way, my wife can actually hear my stomach gurgling from across the room.
It's really nice. It's not fun, especially when she wants to go to sleep and she goes, "What's wrong? There's something wrong with your stomach." So when you said you feel like you may have had it forever or for a long time, how long is that? When did you first notice it? How old were you then and how old are you now?
Yeah, so I started experiencing digestive issues probably in high school. I'm 35 now. But my mom noticed it early on, and she cut me off of dairy milk. So I actually started drinking like soy milk or oat milk early on. And I tried to stay away from red meat as well. I noticed that was one of the things that it kind of causes my digestion just flare up a little bit.
So you figured out some of the things that seem to get it to kind of flare up and do stuff. But obviously, that doesn't take care of the whole thing. Does it bother you every day, a couple days a week? How often are you bothered by this?
Yeah, it's been feeling more frequent in the last couple months.
Okay.
I can't think of something that might have triggered it, but yeah.
Sure, just happened. Do you smoke cigarettes?
No, I do not. I used to smoke in college for a short time, and then I quit and switched to vaping, and then I completely quit that in 2020.
Great. Okay. So for some time you're not vaping anymore. And by the way, I think that's a useful use for vaping if people are going to actually quit smoking. You know, Carl, did you ever smoke?
I never smoked.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, that's. And I smoked. I smoked when I was in college. Everybody seemed to smoke, and really, it was about 50% of the 60% of the college population smoked. It took me four times to quit. I always talk about that. It was not easy, and I've never lost the desire. I periodically want to pick up a Marlboro or a Newport, and when I talk about it, I can smell it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's I'm an addict. Obviously, I don't smoke anymore, but good for you that you quit. Good for you you went into vaping. Good for you you stopped that. This has been a problem on and off. So what have you tried? You've gotten rid of dairy products, other foods, any other foods that you've noticed bother you?
Red meat was a big one. Mm-hmm. So any beef really would cause this to become inflamed. Okay. Dairy, cheese, which I don't do the best job of staying away from cheese since I live in Wisconsin.
It's a tough one.
It's tough to stay away from cheese.
Yeah.
I still remember an older son, Zach, was in college, and we would send care packages. And I went there once, and his roommate said, his roommate said, who was from Washington State, he said, "We love your care packages, but everything in the care package seems to have cheese in it. You know, like cheese crackers, cheese whiz, all of that, all of the stuff that we sent him." So I've got an idea for you. So first of all, I think you probably do have IBS, and irritable bowel syndrome is something we really do not understand. And if you look it up on the web, you can see what it usually consists of. It's gas. It's just a distension. It can be some pain and discomfort in the stomach. A whole bunch of different things. It's kind of a wastebasket diagnosis, meaning it probably encompasses many different things going on. And I've got a few suggestions. So first of all, the natural suggestion that may be very, very useful is to go and follow the FODMAP diet, F as in Frank, F-O-D-M-A-P. And the FODMAP diet really resets the biome that's in your gut, probably more in your colon than anywhere else, that may reduce how you basically digest food. And you got to look it up. It's fermentable oligo monosaccharides and disaccharides. And there are strange foods that seem to be in it. It's not just foods like beans, but you've got to look it up. It doesn't make any sense unless you realize what it's doing, which is with your gut. And I recommend people follow the FODMAP diet religiously for 2 to 4 weeks. Only eat the foods on the FODMAP diet. Stay away from all the foods that it says do not eat on the FODMAP diet. And it may reset your colon. And then after 2 to 4 weeks, many people feel better. Then begin to reintroduce foods on a one-to-one basis that you should not eat on the FODMAP diet. And then see what happens. And usually, people get much better. And then periodically, sometimes once a year, maybe twice a year, they've got to follow the FODMAP for a week or two to reset their colon. Because we now theorize that IBS really is due to the gut bacteria that you have, mostly in your colon and your small intestine. So I would highly recommend that. That can be a good thing. Now, when it comes to pain in your stomach, if you actually have pain under the rib cage, quite often that's due to excess either GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, or some excess acid in your stomach. Over-the-counter Prilosec, 20 milligrams a day for 2 to 4 weeks can set that at ease. But I do the FODMAP first, and that may naturally take care of it, but not, you know, just boost it a little bit with Prilosec for 2 to 4 weeks, and that may do it. Both of those things, I think, can make it. And it tends to be something that comes and goes. And you probably, like you said, you've had it for some time. But this is a natural way with a little bit of medication, if you need it, of resetting your gut. And then you and your wife will be happy because it will not make a sound when you're in bed trying to go to sleep. And she will no longer say, "What's in your stomach tonight?"
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I will definitely look up the FODMAP, and I wrote down Prilosec as well.
That's right. Well, good. Well, thanks. Thanks for your call. And what you have is really common and is going to help other people. So thanks for being on the show.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's get to our first healthy living topic today. There is new research out about a low-calorie sweetener that's linked to heart attack and stroke. We're talking about xylitol.
Right, xylitol. So xylitol is kind of interesting. It's a sugar alcohol. That's what it's called. It actually is a carbohydrate. It's naturally found in things like cauliflower and eggplant and spinach and raspberries, but in teeny tiny amounts. And if you actually did the calculation, it would take a ton of fruit to equivalent the xylitol that's in one diabetic cookie.
A whole ton of fruit?
Like a tonnage. Wow. Like an enormous amount. So maybe it's only half a ton.
Sure.
Maybe it's only 1,000 pounds though. Of spinach.
Yeah.
I mean, so they can label it as a natural sweetener and not an artificial sweetener, and it doesn't seem to necessarily, you know, increase blood sugar. They recommend it for diabetics. However, they were looking at xylitol and looking at a number of calculations of other risk factors associated, chemical risk factors in your body, metabolic profiles associated with heart disease. And lo and behold, this particular study that came up and showed that there may have been up to a 20%, maybe even a 1,000-fold increase in essentially how xylitol affects our blood chemistry. And this thing is in everything.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
have
in
you
a
ever
lot.
Read what's in your toothpaste?
Yeah, since I saw this study, I started looking around for xylitol, and it's in, you know, the gum that
it's
my kids
everything.
Eat yeah, all the
it's
time,
in,
toothpaste,
it's in everything.
Mouthwash,
yeah, it's in
all
everything.
Kinds
you know,
of stuff.
Because we've associated, because we've habituated ourselves to the fact that we like sweet things. And sweet things, from an evolutionary point of view, of course, were important because we're always looking for calories when we're, you know, in the bush.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, so we're programmed for calories, and now they're in everything. And then there was other studies that looked at whether or not xylitol affect platelet function. And we know that platelet function is important because if the platelets cause clots where we don't want to have it, it can cause a heart attack and stroke, and we take aspirin to get rid of platelet dysfunction. So xylitol may be on the list of things that we shouldn't take. And then the other question that's really being asked more and more is whether or not any artificial sweetener, even though it satisfies our sweet tooth initially, does it increase our appetite for carbohydrates later on?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, so we have sweetness and then we don't get the calories, and does it program us to eat more calories later on? And our society is getting heavier. All you have to do is look at the way people looked in the 1950s and the 1960s, and they were thinner than they are now. And it's because we have become a sweet-obsessed society. We love sweets, and it's everywhere. And xylitol is in so many things that you don't think of as diet. Do you think of your toothpaste as diet toothpaste?
No, I don't.
Now, you may think of your gum as diet gum.
Yeah.
And your breath mint, I mean, you don't want sugar in your breath mint, so you can say instead of being like 2 calories or 5 calories, it says 1 calorie. But really?
Does that matter?
I mean, you can have a small amount of breath mints, and it's a... How about in your mouthwash? You think of xylitol, you know, diet mouthwash that you don't swallow, but you're getting a little bit in your mouth.
Or it's in
cough syrup.
Vitamins. Yeah.
In chewable vitamins. So the question is xylitol becoming the new thing that we want to avoid, and is it going to go the way that Snackwells went back in the day?
Now, I'm curious about this, Zorba. We see so many of these studies come through on this show. Yeah. Is this one of those studies where this might affect how you buy or don't buy products? Like,
well,
do you think you'll avoid xylitol products?
You know something? It is one study. This is one study. And the reality is, if you paid attention to one-and-done studies, you wouldn't eat anything
you'd eat
in
nothing.
Our society.
You'd buy nothing and eat
you'd
nothing.
You'd have the cardboard diet. You would no longer eat any red meat, or you wouldn't have the occasional brat. You might be eating all margarine. You would never touch butter. And before you know it, you would not be having a good time in life.
But it's on your radar now.
Definitely on the radar, and we are going to do updates on this xylitol study moving forward over the next few months. This is not only going to be one, but every month or so, we are going to look up what's the latest on xylitol, because it may be that xylitol is something that we should run the banner to get out of the stuff that's in everyday use, like mouthwash. Not just breath mints, mouthwash, toothpaste, et cetera. What are we taking that's causing cardiovascular disease? Because we don't know why there's so much heart disease in our society. Even though we reduction of smoking, eating better, we want to know everything that can affect our heart, because inevitably, whatever affects our heart and our brain affects our life.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now. This is a caller from El Paso, Texas.
Hi, I was going to ask, like, what's the most beneficial way or the best thing to do to detox, like your gut or everything, you know, just a good detox?
Sure. Good question. People ask that all the time. The answer is what we just talked about, the FODMAP diet, F-O-D-M-A-P. That really resets your gut. That's the theory, is that it resets your gut flora because it's fermentable oligodisaccharides and polyglycols. And these are basically the carbohydrates in our gut that feed the bacteria. I mean, we have a mountain of bacteria in our gut, mountain of bacteria. I mean, and we don't like to study poop. You know, there are very few researchers.
Wait, speak for yourself here.
Very few researchers, you know, unless they're like three-year-olds and four-year-olds.
Sure, oh, yeah.
They research their poop all the time. Yeah. But we don't like poop. And so poop has not been, you're going into research, what did you get your PhD in? The study of poop. You know, scatology is sort of in the backwater of what we've studied over the years.
And no pun intended.
You like it. No pun intended. And so the reality is we're learning more and more about that. So if you want to reset your gut, go to the FODMAP diet, do it 2 to 4 weeks, make it absolutely rigorous, and then reintroduce some of the foods that are not on the FODMAP diet and see how you feel. And many people then start to feel better because their gut flora has changed.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Call the show anytime. You can leave us a voicemail with your question. But before the break, it's time for one of our listeners to give us a piece of their mind. This is your favorite segment, Zorba. This is Disagreeing with the Doc. All right, Zorba, today's objection comes via voicemail, and this is from a listener in Bayfield County.
And I'm listening to your broadcast discussing smartphones. And there's something I want to point out. I am totally blind. It wasn't caused by diabetes, but I did develop diabetes. And I'm using one of the continuous glucose monitors. And the way I'm able to keep track of my blood sugar is through an app that runs on, you guessed it, a smartphone. Because it's able to read the information to me. I would never be able to use the monitor that comes with the continuous glucose monitor. Thank God they have it set up so it handshakes with the smartphone. So I just wanted to point out that the smartphones do have a very, very positive contribution for some of us. You have a great day. I do enjoy your program. Keep up the great work.
Thanks a lot. The CGMs, continuous glucose monitors, are a boon to diabetics, mm-hmm. especially a boon to diabetics who have had difficulty controlling their diabetes. They're really a major step forward. And the fact that they connect to a smartphone, which basically is a computer. So when you were a kid, they never talked about transistor radios. That was kind of, you never...
I had one. I had a little radio next to my bed. Radio. Yeah.
But the little radio that I had a transistor, one transistor.
Oh, okay.
Because it used to be, I remember the radio had the first radio we had in our house had tubes. Some people may remember them. They were heavy radios and they used like six D batteries. They're really heavy. Yeah. And then a transistor radio used like one C battery or a D battery and they're much more expensive. Well, our smartphone has the equivalent of 4 to 5 billion transistors.
Oh, wow.
4 to 5 billion transistors. Enormous amount of transistor equivalents, which are basically silicone chips. And they can do remarkable things. And what they do is they translate the CGM so that he can hear it on his phone, make a difference, and diabetes.
Amazing
step forward. Yeah. And so great to point that out. And for anyone who has difficulty controlling their diabetics, they should talk to their doc about getting on a CGM, find out if their insurance covers it. And I'll tell you something. They are a major step forward in diabetic care.
Do you think Zorba has been phoning it in? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll have more of your calls coming up, more emails, more voicemails, and we'll cook up some couscous with roasted vegetables. Couscous. It's going to be good. So keep it right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio right here in Madison, Wisconsin on
Wisconsin Public Radio.
I got Zorba Pastor right across the desk from me. He's wearing, you're looking good. You got your glasses. You're wearing
a Hawaiian shirt on today.
Why
don't you see? And I've got, you know, the Road to Hana.
Oh, that's your T-shirt. You got a T-shirt.
Yeah, I got,
that's a double Hawaiian situation.
I am color coordinated in the same thing. That's
you're looking good.
I've got it. Look good, feel good, play good. I think I told you years ago, I had a trainer at the UW in the kinesiology department, and he used to be a hockey player, and I said, why do you guys get dressed up in like ties and a sports coat before you go out and bang each other up? And he said, look good, feel good, play good.
That's perfect.
It's good. But he was in college. He said it should be look good, feel good, play well, but that doesn't sound good. That's what I have to say. Anyway,
at
I look
rate.
Good and I feel good and I play good. Couscous with chickpeas and roasted vegetables. I was just in Morocco, a little while ago in Morocco. Have you ever been in Morocco?
I'd love to go there. No, I've
you know,
been
it
there.
Should be on your place. A little hard to get there.
Yeah.
Takes a while. Turns out it is a common place for the Brits and the French to go. Like we go to Mexico, they go to Morocco. And when I landed in Marrakesh, it took me almost 2 hours to get through customs because there were like four British planes and French planes that came through, and people go there for a long weekend. It is a dynamite place to go. Incredibly safe, delicious food, and that's why I wanted to do a couscous recipe because you have it. Now, have you ever had couscous?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah,
it's great.
Couscous
is great.
The
kids love it. It's awesome.
Kids love it.
Yep.
Easy to do, and if you've never had couscous, try this, and if you've had couscous, try it. And it's got a lot of stuff in it because you want your couscous to be tasty. Because we like to produce tasty, vibrant recipes on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. You wouldn't call our recipes dull, would you?
I wouldn't, no.
No, no.
Someone might, but I wouldn't.
Yeah, come on.
No one would.
So lots of stuff.
Let's do this
Lots of stuff. Get your pen and paper out, or you can go to our website at zorbapastor.org and find this recipe. And I always recommend get all of your seasonings, everything together before you actually start. There was a book called Rumen's 20, which was a classic cookbook now, where he said in the first chapter was think.
Right. You kind of scan everything first
scan
and just
everything,
get a picture
get
of
it
what
all
you're
together.
Getting into.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. One large red bell pepper, cored and diced. Two medium carrots halved through the length and sliced thin.
All right. Two medium carrots.
A small red onion diced into kind of one-inch chunks.
One small red onion diced.
Medium zucchini halved through the length. 4 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
4 big tea olive oil.
2 tablespoonfuls of fresh lemon juice. Make sure it's fresh.
2 big tea fresh lemon juice.
2 cloves of garlic. If you love garlic, put down 4 or 6 cloves of garlic minced.
2 cloves of minced garlic.
1 teaspoon of cumin and 1 teaspoon of coriander.
All right.
1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon.
1/2 little tea ground cinnamon.
You're going to have some salt, of course, you're going to put in here.
Sure.
1 1/3 cups of dried couscous.
All right. 1 1/3 cups dry couscous. Are there different kinds of couscous?
Well, there's couscous and there's something called Israeli couscous.
Oh, sure.
Which is a larger, sort of a larger couscous. And couscous is a pasta dish. So there's couscous and Israeli couscous.
Okay.
Those are the two different kinds.
Sounds good.
14-ounce can of low-sodium chicken broth. Or you can use veggie broth, too.
All right. A 14-ounce can of low-sodium chicken broth or veggie broth.
A 1/2 teaspoon of turmeric, and I said it correctly.
You did. 1/2 little tea turmeric.
1/2 cup of raisins.
Half a cup of raisins.
I haven't said turmeric. I said turmeric, so the grammar
The R is in there. I hear that R.
A 14-ounce can of chickpeas that are going to be drained and rinsed.
All right, 14-ounce can chickpeas.
1/2 teaspoon of slivered almonds.
1/2 cup of slivered almonds.
And here it is.
Toasted.
Toasted.
Yeah.
That's right. Slivered almonds toasted. And if you like cilantro, 3 tablespoons of cilantro. If not, use parsley.
Okay, sounds good.
You like cilantro?
I actually don't.
You
I'm one of those people where it tastes metallic in my mouth.
So you have a parsley. You're a parsley person.
I'm a parsley guy.
And 2 tablespoonfuls of fresh mint. My wife never liked mint, so I would not use the mint in that recipe. But let me tell you, mint is used everywhere in Morocco. Mint is sort of, it's all around the place. So if
all
you
right.
like mint, some fresh mint.
All right, let's make it, Zorba.
Preheat the oven, 475 degrees, spray an 18 by 13, nice cooking sheet, baking sheet in there with nonstick spray. Put the bell pepper, carrots, onions, and zucchini on the baking sheet. Drizzle with a tablespoonful of olive oil, season with a little bit of salt, evenly put it around all the veggies, roast it for 15 minutes, tossing it once halfway through. So now you've got some roasted veggie. Then If you want to, if you want the veggies even to be more toasty, move it up to the broiler and broil for 1 or 2 minutes to add a nice char. So while they are roasting, in a small mixing bowl, whisk together 3 tablespoonfuls of the olive oil, lemon juice, garlic, cumin, coriander, cinnamon, season with a little salt, maybe a 1/4 teaspoon, set it aside. Then bring the chicken broth or the veggie broth with a little bit of salt if needed and the turmeric to a boil. Add the salt and turmeric, then place the couscous and raisins in a bowl. Put the boiling broth over it, cover it, and wrap it for about 5 minutes. That's about how long it takes to actually cook the couscous. Then add the roasted vegetables, the chickpeas, the almonds, the cilantro, or the parsley in your case, the mint if you're going to use it, little lemon juice to it, mix it around, season it with more salt if you need it, and then serve it warm. Now, those are complicated directions,
but
they're
not
complicated. Yeah. Let me tell you something. You got your broth, you got your couscous, you've got the stuff you're going to put in the couscous. And once you've done this once, you will do it again and again and again, because this is a wonderful recipe. And when you do it, think of Morocco.
Okay.
And if you want a copy of this recipe, you can find it on the web at ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And of course, you can find us through Facebook.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to the phones now, Zorba. Let's try to help out a caller in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
My concern is my fingernails have lines that run from the top of my finger to the base, and they look like white lines, and my fingernails are spooned, and I can't figure out how I can remedy that.
Sure. How long have you had that?
You know, I've had it for quite a while. I don't think I had it when I was younger. But I have 2 siblings that I've noticed it on.
It actually has a medical name, which is chylonychia, and spoon nails are often, you know, for some people, they can actually be a symptom of iron deficiency anemia. Not common, but it happens. And iron, it also can be due to a liver problem called hemochromatosis, where you actually have too much iron in your liver. Pretty unusual. Usually, it really is sort of a genetic thing that happens from a soft nail, and the nail plate is basically that's producing the nail is depressed in the center and averted laterally, and the indentation is caused from that. But it's possibly something that's going on metabolically unusual, but if there really is serious spooning, then when you see your doctor next time, have them do a blood test and see whether or not you've got the right blood count and whether you've got an iron deficiency anemia. Sounds like it's more genetic if you've got a couple of siblings, but I would check your iron count. That's what I would do. If you came to my office and I really saw significant spooning, I would do just a blood count to see whether or not you're anemic, and then I would follow that up.
And does spooning always include the lines that go from top to bottom?
You know, there's so many things in the nails that are just variations in the nails. And people in our society, probably in a lot of societies, are very conscious of their nails. You know, we like to keep our nails closely clipped on the whole. Some people like to keep their nails long, you know, because culturally they like long nails. Carl has his nails are now yellow, and Carl made them yellow.
Yeah, they're fluorescent yellow.
Fluorescent. Do they glow in the dark?
I haven't noticed that.
Yeah,
no.
I have to see. Well, just when the lights are out, see whether or not they glow in the dark. And Carl yellowed his nails because he was at a music festival.
Yeah, and the kids got, you know, they got excited with the nail polish. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyways.
And all you have to do is look at the proliferation in our society of nail salons. So, you know, we've become, you know, very interested in nails, especially women who are often more interested in nails than men. Nonetheless, there's a lot of variation that is not due to anything metabolically. It's just the way your body is built. And by the way, if you have brittle nails, eating gelatin tablets, which I remember my Aunt Myrtle always swallowed gelatin tablets because her nails were brittle. And in fact, they probably were brittle because she washed dishes without wearing gloves, because among other things, do you wear gloves when you wash your dishes with soap?
No, But I don't spend that much time washing dishes because I've learned how to keep it to a minimum.
How to keep it to a minimum. But nonetheless, let me tell you something. Dishwashing detergent is really dangerous for your nails. So even though you keep it to a minimum, if you're using any dishwashing detergent, then you want to wear gloves. So next time you see your doc, have your blood count taken and make sure you're not anemic. And if not, then it's your genetics, which is what I actually think this probably is. So,
thank you. I'm going to use those gloves.
So yeah, that sounds really good. You take care now.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's check out a voicemail now. This is a listener from Barberville, Kentucky.
A few episodes back, he mentioned that he had written many prescriptions for patients who wanted to use Viagra, and it reminded me of something that happened to my husband and I many years ago. When it first came out, my husband was curious and asked the doctor a bit about it, and the doctor said he would not prescribe that medicine without talking privately to the wife first, that there were some things that he consulted couples together and some that he consulted them individually. And I wondered what Dr. Pastor thought about that policy on the part of our family doctor. Thank you very much for listening.
Well,
is that an unorthodox policy there?
No, I think you do different things. You go, I mean, there is no one size fits all for anything. Okay. For anything when it comes medically. So here it was a physician who said, I'm not going to give that to you unless I know your wife is involved and wants to have sex with you. I mean, that's what I assume that physician might be saying. And of course, that's presumptuous on my part, but, you know, I'm a radio doc. I'm used to presumption. I'm going to, you know, play the role of that. On the other hand, I RX Viagra all the time. It used to be very expensive. Now it's really inexpensive. It's probably like 20 to 30 cents a tablet. And it used to be $10 to $20 a tablet.
Oh, wow.
It was very expensive. So it's very inexpensive. And if somebody wants to have Viagra, to me, the contract is with the patient. I don't have a contract with the patient and the wife. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not the same thing. So I think that physician followed what that physician thought was morally and ethically correct. And then the patient has to decide whether or not they really want to continue with that physician or go to another physician. But I think there are moral things that go on, and I think that's okay. You know, I think there are morality issues. From my point of view, every physician is different. My idea is that my contract is with the patient and not with the patient and the partner.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, we love when our listeners contribute their healthy living tips to the show.
Absolutely.
We always love that,
right?
We love
it. Absolutely.
All right, so the following voicemail came from Judy in Wisconsin.
Dr. Zorba keeps asking about tinnitus, and as a body worker, I started back in 1991, and a lot of us know that if you work on the neck, if you get somebody who knows how to work on the neck, sometimes that can help tinnitus. Thank you.
I haven't heard of this. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't heard about network with tinnitus, but there are a lot of things that may... One of the things with tinnitus is getting your brain away from it so it does not bother you. I've had tinnitus for many, many years. Now that we're talking about it, it comes to the forefront.
As soon as you think
about
it, right?
As soon as you think about it, it comes to the forefront.
I hear you.
And the more I talk about it, the louder it gets. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really noticed it all morning at all. But so there are a lot of other things that basically dissuade us from thinking about it or move it to the background. And I could easily see where some kind of body work, especially neck work, may get rid of that tinnitus. So if you've got tinnitus and it bothers you, go to a massage therapist, maybe a chiropractor, somebody who does neck, somebody maybe an acupuncturist, and see whether or not that'll work for your tinnitus. Anything that gets your brain away from it actually is less disturbing. And for some people, they're really, really bothered by tinnitus all the time. This can be one more excellent cure.
Do you have a healthy living tip for the show? stick your neck out. Let us know. You can leave us a voicemail or send us an email at... You liked that one.
That really got to me. Some of them more than others. That one got to me.
Okay, good.
Zorba at WPR.org, of course, through Facebook.
More of your calls, more of your voicemails.
Anytime.
More
anytime.
Emails. And we're going to dig into another healthy living topic, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. He's sitting right over there looking good in his Hawaiian shirt.
I look good.
Looking dapper.
I look good.
Yeah.
I am dapper today.
And if you're feeling dapper or you just have a health question, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. You got it, Zorba. How did you know that number? All these years, you got that number down. But before we get back to those calls, let's do another healthy living topic. We're talking about AI and facial thermal imaging and heart issues. What is
it? Fascinating. This is a fascinating study. So first of all, computers have changed our lives.
Mm-hmm.
AI, in many ways, will do the same thing that computers did. I mean, they're going to change things that are going on because it's a different way of using computerization to do things. So
mm-hmm.
this was a facial thermal imaging AI to see whether or not it could predict whether or not you have coronary artery disease by looking at thermal imaging of your face.
Huh.
Small study, only 460 people, but a very interesting study. So thermal imaging captures the temperature distribution and the variation on an object's surface by detecting infrared radiation emitted by the object. So they looked at the feasibility of using thermal AI imaging to predict the presence of coronary artery disease. Okay? They took 460 people. The average age was 58, because these are people older. About a third of them, a little less than a third of them, were women. And the thermal imaging looked at their face. So 322 of the people, 70%, were confirmed to have coronary artery disease. So these are people who have risk factors. Risk factors such as high cholesterol, men are more likely to have it, whether smoking, whether they have a high fasting blood sugar, the usual things, C-reactive protein, usual things to look at that. It turned out that thermal imaging was 13% better at predicting whether they had coronary artery disease than the usual risk factors that I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So let me tell you what the three most significant predictors were of this thermal imaging. Overall, left-right temperature difference between the left side and the right side of your face.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I mean, it's something we never look at. The maximal facial temperature and the average facial temperature. So in other words, it's the facial temperature, the average one, and other things were also predictive. Whether or not your right eye region was hotter, whether or not the left-right temperature difference in the left temple actually produced a difference. So I think if this turns out to be true, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
One study, minimal study at the beginning. One of the things you'll do in the future that may be the case is you may not just go into your doctor's office. You may go up to a kiosk. You may put your face in the kiosk, and the kiosk may say to you, you're healthy, or just like you weigh yourself, you have to go and get further risk factors for coronary artery disease.
Hmm.
And I find this really fascinating.
Yeah.
Because what happens is we look at people and we go, well, you're overweight, or you smoke cigarettes, so we've got to check you for coronary artery disease. There are things we look at. It may be that AI facial imaging is going to help rule in or rule out whether or not you have coronary artery disease. This is a fascinating study that really shows something that AI may help us with our health.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's go back to the phones. Let's see if you can help out a caller in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I know a lot of people, you know, whenever they have immediate family members that have medical issues, you go down a rabbit hole of trying to get as much information as possible about it, including, like, anecdotes of people's lived experiences.
Sure.
My partner's dad has MS, mm-hmm. and he did exactly that. And one of the anecdotes that he had come across was that somebody that he knew that also had that diagnosis mm-hmm. experienced, painful pins and needles feelings whenever they were in, like, hot water, so, like, in a hot tub. Over Memorial Day weekend, we had the privilege of being in one, and he experienced that same pins and needles feelings. So that moment of realization dawned on him. And my question is, how do you, like, medically and emotionally prepare for a diagnosis like that when the anecdotes start adding up?
Sure. Well, first of all, they're anecdotes. That's really important. MS is interesting in many ways. First of all, northern climates have more MS than southern climates. Hmm. You never knew
that?
I
didn't know that.
Well, you're obviously not a doctor.
No.
But as you...
obviously.
Obviously. Otherwise, we'd have two doctors on the show.
Yeah.
But northern climates have more. As you go south, like close to the equator, there's not much MS. And the theory about MS is that it's a virus that comes in and affects people. We don't really understand what it is yet and how it actually is transmitted, if it is a virus. Pins and needles feeling, not really an accurate diagnosis at all. It's not predictive of MS. And the problem with anecdotal information is when you get a lot of it, then you get worried about it. Like you said, how do you handle it? Oh, I'm in a hot tub and I've got pins and needles feeling. Maybe I'm going to develop MS. Well, that's kind of hard to do. You know, how do you get your mind around it? Well, you do it with information that it's not an active predictor of MS. So I think having information really helps. Now, this is your partner's dad who has MS?
Yes, his dad has MS. My question was mainly about, like, what do you do with this kind of information? Because his dad in particular has, like, the deteriorating kind, and so he's, like, progressively watched.
Oh, you know... there are a number of books that are on the market that help you to actually deal with people who then have chronic deterioration. So your partner is really worried about his dad. Is that really the situation?
Yeah, it's definitely touchy.
It's very, very difficult. So looking and trying to find self-help books and also going to individual counseling can be very helpful, because looking at a loved one who deteriorates is a very, very difficult situation. And sometimes a counselor with a number of sessions can really help you get to the other side so that you can support that person who's deteriorating. Have they gone to counseling?
Not that I can recall.
Mm-hmm. It can be very, very useful. It really is useful when a loved one who is deteriorating and doing bad, and you want to do the best for them, you know, you want to be the support for them. And sometimes a counselor can just put it into a perspective in a few sessions of what you should do to help them. And helping them, in the end, it's a win-win situation, because helping them also really helps you.
Okay.
Thank you for sharing that. We have a number of people who listen to our show, who really have people with chronic health problems. I'm my wife, for many years had chronic problems, and I went to counseling, and that really helped me get a perspective on what I could do to help her so I could really be stalwart in helping her with her problem, and that helped me and helped my children too. So that's what I would recommend as the advice for your partner. Thanks for sharing that with us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Take care. Bye-bye. Have a great day.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's do a voicemail now. Let's hear from a listener in Wisconsin.
I'm calling about anemia. Why do you get it? And what are the good foods to get rid of it, or what are the good supplements that are used to get rid of it, and in particular, iron. Taking iron pills, will that make it better or worse? Thank you very much. Always like to hear you. because you guys are getting funnier. And I like that. Bye.
We're getting funnier.
Getting funnier. Okay. Getting funnier. Tom was funny, but
Tom
Carl,
was very funny.
But Carl is a punster. I mean, give him a word and he'll run with it. You know, he got him into trouble in elementary school. Did he get into trouble in high school?
A little bit more in, I think middle school was where I kind
middle
of
school,
peaked
because
trouble.
You just
yeah.
peaked trouble because
terrible.
You just popped up.
I was, you know, had such like, a mouth on me.
You had such
terrible.
A mouth
yeah.
on you, you know, and then by the time you had detentions in high school, you yeah. learned you had consequences to the mouth. Did the parents have to come to school? Did you ever have to go to school and did they say, you know, we got to talk to you about Carl?
Well, it yes, and it was tricky because both my parents, they're retired now, they're both teachers. So they didn't give me a whole lot of sympathy when I would complain about a teacher.
No, they didn't.
And especially if I got in trouble with teachers, it was trouble
like
at home
trouble,
for me, for sure.
Trouble at teachers
yep.
were trouble at home.
Teachers
that's right.
stick,
I can
they
just
know. They know
they
how hard
stick
that job
together.
Is. They know.
Right, you got the child on one side, you got the teachers on the other side. Yeah,
yep.
I can just imagine that. Well, first of all, anemia is a broad subject. And, I mean, it used to be years ago, you know, they would, you know, when I was a kid, it was Geritol, feel stronger fast. And Geritol was a liquid vitamin concoction, which had iron in it. And we don't give iron anymore. We give iron to menstruating women. We give iron to women in pregnancy. But if not, we don't give iron because people generally get enough iron in their diet. Certainly, if they're omnivores and they have red meat, you get iron with red meat. And if you're vegetarians, you get iron through the foods that you're eating. And most vegetarians, you know, do not have an iron deficiency problem. But if you've got an anemia, you have to find out what it is. Is it due to an iron deficiency? If so, and it's an older age, the first thing we do is a colonoscopy or a check for colon cancer, because that is a common cause of iron deficiency in people who are at age when they get colon cancer, because that can be the first symptom. They have a polyp in their colon that may not be cancerous, that's bleeding, or they have a cancer in their colon. So we check that out. The other thing that can cause it can be a B12 or folate deficiency. If you're a vegan, you don't get any animal products, because B12 is made from animal products, and vegans basically actually get their B12 through insect parts that are in grains that we eat. And that's been shown time and time again, because there actually is no plant way to get B12. It's only from animals. And believe it or not, ants, wasps,
crickets.
Insects, crickets.
Get that cricket
but
powder.
Cricket powder. There probably is cricket powder that you can buy.
Oh,
in the
there
net.
Definitely
we're not
is.
Go in.
Yeah.
You're not gonna
put it in your smoothie. We'll do
go.
A cricket powder recipe next time.
But anyway, you cannot avoid animal products because they're insects that are in the food that we eat, insect product. But anyway, the B12 and folate deficiency and other things that can occur too. So if you're anemic, you got to have a diagnosis. And you should not take iron unless you have a reason to take iron, and that's really been diagnosed. Because when you get older, and when women are no longer menstruating, you should get enough iron in your food. And if not, you want to find out what's going on. The other thing is this. The normals change. So your normal, for instance, when you're, we'll say, a 25-year-old male, may be different than when you're or female, may be different when you're 50, and may be different when you're 75, and may be different when you're 100. So that those numbers can change, and your normal may be a lower number than it was when you were older. So that's kind of in the equation, too. So I didn't give you a simple answer, but I gave you an answer that I think is appropriate to the question.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we head out today, Zorba, as you know, we get so many questions from our wonderful listeners.
Wonderful.
But we also get voicemails from folks who just want to share a comment or a health tip. We
good
love
comments,
that.
Good yeah. comments. Bad comments.
There's medium comments. Yeah, all yeah, It's yeah. the whole spectrum
do we
of
ever
comments.
Get, do we ever get... nasty phone calls?
Not maybe like one or two just, every, you know, decade.
You know, it's so rare. It's so rare. People are
thanks,
so
listeners,
nice.
Thanks, for not
that's
sending
right.
us nasty,
nasty that's
voicemails.
Right.
We
that's
appreciate
right.
it. Anyway, so we got a whole segment here that we created called Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments. People calling us with their health tips.
We do appreciate it.
That's right.
Yeah.
We actually do.
We do. No. And the triangle player, we got the best triangle player in the Midwest for
really?
That. So that's quite a special theme. Mm-hmm. Let's hear from a listener in Appleton, Wisconsin.
And you're talking about tinnitus and your hand on the volume knob while driving. Well, when I'm watching a movie, I've got to have subtitles on. Because you're right, the action scenes are loud, and then when they're talking, the dialogue is quiet. So I always got to have the closed captionings on so I can tell what's going on.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Have you done that with a movie where you just can't hear the dialogue?
Well, there are a few of things involved here. First of all, on commercial television, the commercials are louder.
Oh, man, they just come on and
they're louder because they want you to listen to it.
So. Right.
Dialogue, as you get older, I've discovered that my ability to understand things on TV can be different, especially if they have a Brit accent or something of that nature. So for movies, sometimes I will turn the subtitles on, and I go to my Amazon or I go to my Apple thing and I do subtitles. Mm-hmm. And you know what it comes? It comes on.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is yes, sometimes the dialogue. You never do that, right?
I've done it sometimes, I mean, yeah, I've noticed that, you're watching a movie and there's an action scene, it's so loud, so you turn everything down and then it's time for dialogue.
Right.
You have to turn it way up
and,
again.
And what happens is, as you get older, you have presbycusis. I think that's how it's pronounced. Huh. I know I probably mispronounced it.
I've never heard of that.
Correctly. But it's age-related changes that occur in the high frequencies.
Ah,
and the
okay.
high frequency is where dialogue occurs. So the reality is, yes, you've got to change it up and down and and have the volume on. Brings up a really
so
good
a little trouble in the trouble is what
trouble
that is.
In the trouble. See,
right?
You can still do it. Trouble in the trouble.
Great.
I told you, advertising. That's exactly it.
All right.
You can just sit there or comedy. You should be a writer on a comedy show.
I don't
Maybe
think
this
it'd be good.
Is a comedy show.
I don't know. Do you have a tip or comment for the show
or a joke?
Anything.
That's
yeah.
Right. Or a pun.
All the above. Just send us an email at
800-462-7413.
Wait a second. That's our number.
Our number. See? That's exactly what it is.
What's the email?
Zorba@WPR.org.
Should we do this again next week, Zorba?
Stay well.
Why not? If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime.
We gave the number.
Yeah, we gave it all. Right? We gave it our all. Visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime. Leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please check with your doctor.
Absolutely.
Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
From WPR.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.